You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, Senior Minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin.
Good morning. And welcome to Unity of Tustin. It is a joy to be together in spiritual community as we celebrate and really connect with what it means to walk a spiritual journey. And so the service today is a part of that remembering, that returning to what is true and alive and wanting to become more embodied in your life, through your life. So as we begin this morning, I invite us to start by beginning in prayer. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath in and release it. And continuing to breathe, to follow the breath as a reminder that we cannot breathe in the past or in the future, only now. And so when we follow the breath, it becomes a symbol for our willingness to be here now, fully embodied, awake. So in that consciousness, O Holy One, essence of all that is, we open to the truth that there is no separation in consciousness. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. Dissolve those areas of separateness that appear in our life, so that our only experience is God. God in all form. Open our hearts and our minds to that living reality that includes and that is included as God. In this awareness and in this living reality of truth, we stand in gratitude. And so it is. Amen. When we're wandering in the wilderness, we need to hear that, don't we? There is a place of holding, or in certain languaging, salvation. There is rest on the horizon. That seems to be a lot stirring right now in people's lives. I've been having some really beautiful conversations with community members of, and actually people outside the community even, of things that are really stirring, moving, this kind of wandering in the wilderness experience that feels like an undoing, an unknowing, you know, moving in between one reality and another, and just kind of not knowing where exactly where the ground is. But, you know, definitely energetically, when we start to feel those times in our life where everything is kind of turned upside down, there is this sense of needing that reassurance. I am the rock. I am your place of salvation. And again, this is where meditation becomes super important. It baffles my mind sometimes, you know, that and I am included in this, and I'll think, well, I'm too busy to meditate, or I've got too much going on to meditate, or my life is too chaotic to meditate. And it's like, that's exactly when you need to meditate more. So if you're ever in your wilderness experience, you're ever in this kind of chaotic environment, and you think, I don't, you know, about meditation, just know you need to call on your Moses capacity. If you missed last week, then listen to the talk to find out what that means, although I'll be sharing a little bit more as well. But this Moses quality that kind of knows how to wrangle the troops when they're starting to murmur against a higher consciousness, a higher way of relating, a more mature way of relating, a direct experience of God. You know, there's aspects of us that are like the sabotage, the saboteur, that actually hijack and keep us kind of flailing and floundering for a lot longer than we need to. And that's where the Moses quality in all of us knows how to be the channel and the conduit for the miracle, to be open to that, and to keep the parts of us that are undeveloped, unsophisticated, in their rightful place. This is where we start to listen to our thoughts, but we don't believe them wholeheartedly. We're more curious than we are needing to know. And we're going to dive into that with even more depth in a little bit. So we've been working with this material, Finding Yourself in Transition by Robert Brummett, and we're nearing actually the completion of this series. And I thought it was going to be appropriate because, you know, we're in the midst of some kind of changes happening, right? The sabbatical team, Gary did an announcement earlier today. You'll be hearing little bits coming from them that lead up for this time of where I'll be gone for 3 months. And I have to tell you, I'm beginning to really think through what all that's going to mean. And it's big. I mean, we've thought through a lot of it, but I haven't thought personally what that's going to mean. I was thinking the other day, well, what am I going to do not checking my social media? That's going to free up hours. An email, of course, so there's all of these little things that happen when whether we initiate a change or a change is initiated for us, because sometimes that happens, there's this sense of kind of needing to reorient again, that there's a time of chaos, a time of wandering in the wilderness towards this sense of a promised land. In the story of the Israelites and Moses, they left Egypt in search of freedom. They were in bondage. Egypt at one point was their salvation. It was their rock. It was the place where they were fed, where they were cared for. And then eventually it became the place of bondage. And then when it became the place of bondage, it was time to leave. But they were reluctant. They were willing, and then they weren't. And then they were willing, and then they weren't. And then they finally left. And the whole journey to the promised land is filled with crisis, people murmur, the Lord or the I am consciousness, that connection that we have with the divine comes through and speaks to Moses, and then the miracle happens. And then the people are, okay, yeah, that was the right decision after all. So there's this continual, and this goes on and on and on, story after story of there's a crisis. They murmur against the leader. When you're in the middle of the wilderness, there's a tendency to want to find out who to blame. I feel like I'm speaking some truth. Just be aware, if you are needing to blame someone or set someone straight or whatever it may be, that is more about you than it is about them. And what's really difficult is that we forget that and we completely project it out and objectify. And in this case, the Moses as the leader. It's his fault. And then when, their needs are met, they're totally like little children. When their needs are met, they're fine. When their needs aren't met, everything's wrong with the world. So there's this sense of continually needing to keep that piece of us that tends to be all over the place more in check. But there's these natural kind of questionings that start to come up when we're in the midst of moving from some sense of bondage or stuckness or limited sense of self, this where we're in suffering of some kind, to what we perceive to be this promised land. And what Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, talked about is that whenever there's this great desire within our self, within our being, that needs to be free, that wants to be free, free from bondage, free from ignorance, free from this kind of the what he would call the animal propensities, or some of those more basic patterns of behavior, where we're really not very conscious, where we do fly off in fits of rage, or we do hurt people, or, you know, physically or emotionally, you know, those kinds of things, when we're completely unconscious, when there's a desire to move from that into a liberation of some kind, or in Unity's language, it would be into awakening to the Christ within, we are on our own journey to the promised land. Just like the Israelites, we take our own journey to the promised land. And just like the Israelites, there is this kind of idea of what it's going to look like, right? When we set out upon our spiritual journey, we tend to have some kind of an idea of what it's going to look like in the end. Anyone not have that? I mean, that's kind of that's the carrot, right? That's the part that says this, all of this pain and suffering must be worth something. All of this wandering in the desert, in the wilderness, all of this sitting in meditation, all of this therapy, all of this, you know, it has to be for something. And that's our promised land. You know, for myself, I think about part of what the promised land for me is a sense of connection with God, or abiding sense of connection with God. So that's kind of like my continual trajectory toward this promised land. Now, what I'm also very aware of is that that is an idea. That is the carrot. I have no idea what the promised land is really like. I have a semblance of it, but I don't know. Because to know is to limit, is to put into a structure, a concept in my head, God, reality. And this whole journey is about discovering, not knowing. The wandering through the wilderness helps us become calm in certain ways. It develops certain capacities, but it also isn't the end. And one of the things that the wilderness training helps us, this time in between the bondage or the sense of structure and limitedness, in liberation, is that we start to really ask, what's going on here? What is actually stirring? What is wanting to come through? And this is where our idea of a promised land, what we're in search for, what the change is really about, actually can start to stop us from experiencing a new sense of a new beginning. There's this video clip that I just love because it describes kind of the sense of grasping at what's happening here. And it points to, oftentimes when we're in these wilderness experiences, we need to know. There's something in us that needs to know. And when we need to know, typically it's so that we can control what's happening, and we can have this sense of we've got this. We can play God here. We don't have to let go. And the whole wilderness training is actually about becoming sensitive to not knowing and being okay with that, befriending that, so that when we are ready to enter the promised land, there is a sense of curiosity, not of in the world control. So this video clip is from, it's complicated. I've shown this clip once before. It's one of my favorite clips about the human condition when we're in these periods of not knowing and kind of groping around and grasping, because there's something in me that completely identifies with this character, and I'm hoping you'll experience that as well, where she's just needing to know an answer and how we go about doing that sometimes. So for those of you who have not seen this, it is the basic premise of the movie is Meryl Streep's character was married to Alec Baldwin's character, and he cheated on her long ago, and they got a divorce, and he's now married to his then mistress. They have reconnected, and they have started an affair many, many years later after her hating him and not being able to be in the same room with him. Their son graduated from college, and they have now reconnected. So now something is going on. There's a change in her, actually, that's stirring, and it's outpicturing as this affair, but start to listen to how she's kind of putting all of this together. Enjoy.
Hello, stranger. Welcome back. I'm just getting into my car. Yeah, this weekend sounds great. Let me know what I can bring. Okay.
Today?
No, I just wanted to talk, and I was wondering if by any chance you could squeeze me in for an emergency session, because I'm sort of in desperate need of advice. I brought you some coffee cake that you like. Not as a bribe or anything, but...
I only have 20 minutes before my first patient.
Well, that's fine. I'll talk fast.
So, at this point, I just need some sound, unbiased guidance. Is having an affair with, you know who, a good thing or a bad thing? It's a bad thing, right? It can't be. How could it be good?
It's not good. It's not bad.
I've made a list of everything this could possibly be about at my end. May I read it to you?
Please, of course.
Because I emailed it to myself. Okay. Am I still trying to figure out why the marriage failed? Do I want to get back together? Do we have unfinished business? Is this about revenge? Or am I... am I just lonely? Or is it my caretaker thing? I mean, the kids are finally gone now, and all of a sudden Jake is back, and I get to take care of him in some way. Now, I understand. I get how therapy works. I really do. We look at things, we examine them, weeks turn into months, and we're going on 8 years now. And I'm okay with that, I really am, believe me. I like it, I do. But in this case, I need you to tell me what you really think. Like, don't do this, you know? I'd like you to say, don't do this, it's absolutely wrong. Or, go ahead, you'll be fine. I actually want to be told what to do.
What's interesting is I'm already seeing you open up more than you have in some time. I'm thinking through this affair, you may learn to view the world in a different way.
I'm sorry, I just need something more concrete. Are you saying that I should just keep seeing him? Because honestly, I think that if the guilt and the fear could go away, I could let go a little bit, and, you know, I could figure this out.
I wouldn't resist looking at this.
Okay, And another way of saying that might be...
Let go, Jane. It can't hurt.
Thank you.
We look at things, we examine things. I need you to tell me what to do. You know, there's this sense within us, this is that kind of undeveloped part that's looking, searching, needing. And he keeps mirroring back to her, you're in the question. And that's what's really important. You're more alive in the question than in knowing what to do. Because it's in the question that there's something that's unwritten that's being actually written as we live it. Than when we get an answer of this is the definite path. And that's actually a maturing. We're seeing her kind of stepping into a new level of maturing. Hopefully, you know, it's not one that we act out on, right? And some we can create some karmic things to clean up when we're figuring stuff out sometimes, when we're a little unconscious. But there's this sense of something is changing within her. She's becoming more aware of, you know, there's this, her kids are all gone. And she's discovering herself. This is a part of the promised land when we do our inner work, you know, finding ourselves. It's a cliche, but there's a truth to it. There's a sense of finding out who we really are. That this is poking for her. This is opening for her. And this is the journey in the wilderness. But it's interesting that the wilderness experience must at some point give way to an entry into the promised land. So let's look at that a little bit more deeply. Because we all have this sense of what it means to enter into the promised land. And what can happen a lot of times is that we take the idea of what the promised land means and objectify it so that we chase an outer expression instead of an inner state. So, for example, if we're in the process of attaining status or objects or whatever, there's typically something underneath, typically, whether we're sensitive to it or not, that we're actually, you know, we're using the objects to fill this need for value or self-worth. So the objects become the hologram, like the promotion at work, or the you did a great job. Those become an echo or a half-truth to what is actually being wanted or needed, which is a sense of inner value, inner worth. That's more of the promised land, but what can happen is that we can objectify it and look externally for something that actually is an internal experience. And when we do that, what happens, it's like not showering and changing your clothes a lot and thinking that, you know, you're different now. Nothing has really changed inside, but you think it has because the outer circumstances are different. So if you, you know, go through a divorce and you never do any work of looking at what was my role, what is my part in how this happened, and you get remarried, most likely you're going to see similar patterns show up until you start paying attention, because everywhere you are, there you are. What's the common denominator? I was listening to a radio program and he was laughing and said, you know, I'm pretty much an angry person. I heard this thing about if you have 5 angry encounters a day, you know, probably it's you. Right? So there's this sense of becoming aware of that. And until we do some of that inner work, the promised land is a pseudo-promised land. It's a pseudo-new beginning. It's a fake new beginning. It's a hologram of a new beginning. Because nothing is really new. It's like when you break up with someone and then you get back together, but you haven't done any kind of work with each other. And all of a sudden you're in the same patterns again. And you go, oh, nothing's changed, has it? And until we do some of that work, nothing does change. This is the entry into the promised land. And how we can kind of see some of these patterns to developing is by looking at the story of Moses. Moses was not allowed into the promised land. Does anyone remember that? He led them for 40 years. In unity and in metaphysics, 40 typically means it takes as long as it takes. So, you know, we look symbolically at numbers and we see this kind of sense of, you know, they wander through the wilderness as long as it takes to get mature enough to be able to enter the promised land. And in this case, it actually means that the old regime has to die. Literally. Only two people that left Egypt are allowed into the promised land. There was a story with a board at one point, and they were resistant to some change. And this high-powered, you know, paid probably lots of money to come in, and they, you know, was talking with this board about changes. And they said, "Well, we aren't going to do it. That's not right." And he said basically, "Well, you're just going to have to die before before these, because these changes are going to happen." You might have to go before they do, but they're going to happen. So it's that kind of an idea when we're journeying to the promised land. There's something in us that must die and be reborn in a new consciousness. And so the reason that Moses actually isn't allowed into the promised land is because during one of their moments of crisis, this time no water. And the people start to murmur, because what else would you do in a crisis? Good question. What else could you do in a crisis besides murmur? So the Lord comes to Moses and says, "Speak to the rock, and it will open, and there will be water for your people and your livestock." So Moses gathers the people around, and he says, "You know, this rock is going to have water come from it." And he takes his rod and he strikes the rock, and water comes forward. Everyone is pleased, except the Lord. So Moses and the Lord have another conversation. And how it's recorded is that the Lord says to Moses, "I asked you to speak to the rock, and it would open. I did not tell you to use your rod, your stick, to open it." So when we look metaphysically at this, underneath the surface, symbolically, what is this saying? And therefore, the Lord says, "You are not allowed to enter the promised land." So what is that saying? What part has to die? The wilderness training needs to give way to what? And what this is speaking to is the Lord saying, "You need to speak to the rock." There's a sense of in the yogic traditions or in energy, the fifth chakra is about spiritual power. When we speak something, we're giving a voice from what is inside, even if, you know, at a very basic level, you have a thought, and until you express it, it's kind of, you know, more amorphous, it's nebulous, it's floating around in there, but as soon as you express it, there's a concreteness to it. That's why our words become really important, because it's moving out from inside to an outer experience, and there's a definite "you said this." thoughts can kind of, you know, they're a little more floaty. But when we say something, when we declare something, when we speak it, there's a coming into manifestation that's possible. And it energetically, our spiritual power, our voice becomes a vehicle to call into manifestation what is invisible. So the Lord is saying, use your spiritual power. And spiritual power also is a sense, it's like the personal becomes a transparency for the divine to move through. It's like there's a light that shines through, and the personality is much more transparent to the divine. There's a capacity for the divine that isn't there before that. So the Lord is saying, speak, use your spiritual power to take care of your people, for this miracle to unfold. And what does Moses do instead? He takes his rod and he strikes it. And we can look at that as, instead of using spiritual power, instead of being used by the divine, he instead takes his human willpower and he makes it happen. It's that forgetting or that misalignment of what the promised land is really about. And instead of staying curious, instead of being open, of going into the mystery, there's instead this, I know. I need you to tell me what to do. And in that, there's a closed. The door is closed. And Moses is not allowed in. That consciousness is not allowed in. It's perfect for wilderness training. That sense of, I can do it. I need to do it. It is actually detrimental when we start looking at the promised land. So who inherits the leadership? Joshua. Now, who's Joshua? It's interesting. Joshua has the same root name in Jehovah as Jesus does. So there's this kind of this divine quality, a divine leadership, I am, to Joshua. But Joshua's a warrior. So they get to the promised land, and they have to conquer it. The doors aren't just flung open. Come, you're welcome in the promised land. There's the next layer. So Joshua becomes the wager of a holy war, which is an interesting that for those of us who have been on the spiritual journey for a while, we probably hoped it would be a passive, you know, peaceful occupying, right? So let's look at that a little more closely. We're in the wilderness. We've tamed kind of the craziness of some of our patterns and our self-defeating pieces. And now there's a claiming of liberation that is needed. The spiritual warrior is needed. The spiritual leader that says, I will go into what needs to be looked at in order to claim what is true. Anyone ever done that kind of work of going back in and standing in that sense of, I don't really want to look at this, but I know this is the next step. I know that this, and that's powerful, because until we do that Joshua aspect of us, we're kind of wandering around in the wilderness. It's the next layer of entering into the promised land, of entering into liberation. There's this sense of needing to embody, to reclaim what has been pushed out. And the spiritual warrior, that courageous part of us, that willing part of us, says, I will do it. I will go in. I will be willing. I'll be changed. But this is the work. that actually allows us to enter into the promised land. Are you familiar with the Dos Equis commercial, the older one, not the new one, where he says, "Stay thirsty, my friends"? Well, in this case, you know, that Joshua part of us that is entering in, that spiritual warrior, the way that we engage is that we stay curious. Once there's been kind of this mastery of some of the ways that we might get ourselves off track, the next piece, that spiritual warrior, that courageous one, is the one that stays curious to what's really happening, what's really needed, and keeps touching into it and says, "I think I need to look at this. I think I need to explore that. I need to reclaim this part of me. I need to really examine, why do I keep doing this?" Instead of needing to know, we stay curious and dive deeper in. This is the next layer of the work, because it's the part that we're actually entering the promised land then. We're cultivating those capacities of liberation that are needed, that take this sense of power that we are is needed in order to claim it, to live from it, that spiritual power. And so I invite you to really stay curious with when, especially if there's some kind of an objectification happening or a blaming, instead of saying it's that, say, "I wonder what it might be." Be curious, sense into it, lean into it, be more in the question than needing to know an answer, and see what continues to develop. Stay curious, my friends.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.